Hi, everyone, and welcome. This is the DC Comics News Weekly Podcast. This is episode number 173, The Milestones They Just Keep Coming. I'm your host, Seth Singleton. I am joined by the amazing, the brilliant. You're going to know him by Flicky Fashions by the end of this episode, that's for sure. Mr. Brad Flicky. Brad, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm good. How you doing, Seth?
Wonderful. Glad to hear. I'm keeping up. We were just chatting before we started the call. You know, allergies. It's that time of year. What are you going to do?
Sure is.
Yeah. However, if you're like those of us who sometimes have to, you know, either take the medicine or close up some windows and doors and just kind of hang out inside for a bit, we've got plenty to keep you entertained and, well, informed. That's one of our favorite things to do here. Share what we got. Share a little insight where we got it. We always do our movies, our TVs, and streaming. We've got some comics, sometimes a little other. And starting off our movie news, we have the announcement that we have a date for the upcoming Flash movie. It's going to be this Tuesday, the 25th, coinciding with the upcoming CinemaCon that's going on in Las Vegas. Brad, I've got plenty to say. What's your thoughts? First story out of the block, and we've got a date. We're going to see a screening.
I cannot wait to see the social media reaction once people do get to see it, because I think that's gonna hit like wildfire. That's gonna break the internet, because for so many reasons, there's so much writing on the movie for the future of DCU. What are people gonna say about Ezra Miller? What are people going to say about Michael Keaton? You know, so I'm really curious to see what the social media reaction is going to be. And we're going to get another trailer. It looks like we're going to get a final trailer. So I can't wait for that. I can't wait to get more footage, hopefully more Batman footage. And I still don't know if they're setting up Zod to be the main villain of the movie, or is that kind of like a ruse, a sleight of hand. Look over here at Zod, but the real villain is going to be somebody else. And maybe we'll get a hint of that with this new trailer. But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot to be said about the Flash movie this week. And I'm looking forward to all of it. And I hope that the reaction's good. But, DC's really pushing this, or Warner Brothers, I should say. And I don't think they would do that if they didn't think that they had something really great to share with people. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited to see what people are going to say. What about you?
I am definitely excited for what people are going to say, keeping in mind the fact that you'll get this screening on the 25th, but it's going to be until June 16th for the rest of us to actually get out there and see it. And I am still that person who will wait for it to show up on streaming, because right now theaters are not my place to be. With all of that in mind, the buildup, the anticipation, there's been good and bad responses to films recently. And it's often those early seeds that sort of direct what a lot of people's sort of impression is going to be going in. I know the great thing that a lot of us have even said, don't read the reviews before you go. Try not to, put a tint on the glasses you're wearing when you're going in to see it. Try not to color your vision in any way. And yet at the same time, it's hard not to get excited when you've got James Gunn making comments like, it's effing amazing. And where you've got Miller responding in the same way. And also this interesting tease, right? As you mentioned, we're going to have a new trailer. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Brad teasing that up for us nicely. But also this idea of Miller saying, I could say there's villains. And I could say there's a few of them, and I could see there's no villains. There's simply, people with motives, which is always where I think it gets really interesting. Are these villains, or are these simply people with conflicting wants, and who is going to win out? I also feel like, Zod is going to be that thing where everyone's like, Zod, this is big. But then there's another part where it's like, isn't the bigger part that buries in another reality and needs to get home? It seems like that's going to supersede. We're going to have that. And I think the one thing that can really play into it is if someone starts out as a type of villain here and then gets that exposure to what else is possible. And now they start creating more muck as far as just sort of creating more conflict and more confusion and more for the characters to have to deal with. That's where I think it could get really fun. But we can talk more about that when we tease the trailer. Yeah, what's on your mind?
And that's a delicate balance, too, because this movie for your average person on the street that just wants to go to a movie to see Batman, this story could be a little complex. For us comic books, we're used to alternate universes and time jumps and things like that. The average everyday fan might not be. So adding that into the mix, as well as a bunch of different villains, that could be a little confusing. So, you know, I'll be interested to see how they balance that all out.
I do agree that it's going to be interesting. And I'm curious also if there might be a desire on the part of either WB or DC to see the knowledge base just a little bit. I bring that up because I've been catching up on Titans recently. I saw the most recent episode, and I'd seen the media sort of response. But there's a plot point in the most recent episode in which Gar gets more knowledge about the Red, these different entities that exist that sort of are part of our ecosystem, right? We've got the green, we've got the red. And it's through that they introduce another sort of pathway into the multiverse, another nexus where you can access many different points. And when they did that, I just thought to myself, with the Flash movie coming up, is this a way to start building that idea in the minds of fans and viewers, and also maybe start reaching those who aren't regular comic fans, who aren't as familiar with this as we have become for so long, and sort of it's second nature. Multiverse, other dimensions. Yeah, we know all about that. We spent the last 25, 30 years having great conversations, arguments even sometimes about it. So I think it's going to be interesting how we choose to go in that direction, as you pointed out. How can we do it in a way that's engaging for fans who've been waiting for this, and for those who are like, talk to me like I'm four, bring me in easy, don't make me confused, or I'm just not going to be interested anymore. And that's going to be the nuance. But I'm also interested to see what an actor like Ezra Miller is capable of accomplishing, Michael Keaton on top of it, and with a director like Muschietti, who's, I think, done an admirable job, you know, balancing that sort of feeling with different projects like It and others, where it's like, hey, it's not just a scary movie. It's about kids. It's about fear. It's about overcoming adversity. It's about your own sort of personal struggle and how we all have something similar like that. So with that all in mind, I'm excited for the fact that, yes, we will be getting a new trailer. As you pointed out, that's our next upcoming story. Both of these are coming from comic book. We got a chance to grab them from over there. And it looks like there will be a new trailer confirmed ahead of the first screening. And that one, I was having trouble as I was looking back through it going, wait, when is that again? Brad, catch me up. Did you see when the trailer is showing up compared to, we're going to see the screening's going to be Tuesday. So I lost it for a second. Did you catch where they're going to do this teaser at? I
have a feeling that it's either going to be right before the screening or right after. And I'm talking like on Tuesday, when people are getting ready to sit down in the seats, and you know, or after it's over, and kind of correspond with those social media reactions to really kind of stir that pot and get people talking and get it trending. So that would be my prediction, that it would be Tuesday, either before or after the actual screening takes place.
Yeah, I just wanted a quick look through the story, and I just see that it says that the second full trailer for the film is expected to make its debut on Tuesday, April 25th. So that seems to line up with what you were saying. We already know that they're going to be showing the film, and it seems like it would make sense that they would immediately do it. I'm curious how that'll play out. It's a little bit interesting for me for two reasons. One, I'm surprised it's not a little bit earlier in one hand. The other hand, I get that this is going to be for all of us who won't get to see this screening, who have the next 6 to however many weeks until we get a chance to see it. This will be that little bit like, here's something to tide you over for 5 or 6 weeks. Enjoy. Don't say we didn't do anything for you. So I'm interested to see how they're going to play this one out. I think it'll be at least nice for us to have those little extras that perhaps we'll see some reference to in social media, and the new trailer can give us a little bit more of a feeling for that. It seems to build the excitement, just as the announcement from James Gunn that Superman Legacy is already in pre-production. I saw the snapshot, as we're going to mention in this story, one that we grabbed from over at Batman News. Social media sharing cover of the script, Superman Legacy, written by James Gunn. So the story's done. We're going into next stages. How you feeling about this? It seems like we're moving at a pretty steady clip. Not a lot of lag from the announcement to now, right?
Yeah, and that's a good thing. Because, I, you know, we talked about this week to week. There's always another rumor that he's stamping out. He's a very busy guy. There's been a lot of stuff that he's had to do in the last few weeks. And the fact that the script is already done, I mean, that might not be a final draft. It may even just be a first draft, but at least we have a script that's done, written by him. That's really good. We might, you know, this is moving pretty fast. We might get more news quicker than we expected. And I hope that carries over into some of these other projects that are down the line. Like, I hope those enter into production quicker and we get casting news and things like that. Director news, you know, we talked about possible directors for Swamp Thing. I hope we get kind of confirmation on that, maybe more of a time frame when some of the stuff's going to be released. But yeah, I think it's a good sign. I think that you got to hit that iron while it's hot. People are still talking about DC a lot now that James Gunn is taking over. And he's been really good about trickling out the information, keeping us all interested, giving us enough crumbs to keep us coming back. So I'm really happy about that. And yeah, let's see what happens with the casting and, you know, moving forward. What about you?
I think the biggest thing that I'm feeling from all of this is that sense of one of the greatest hindrances to DC up until this point and the DCU has been delays, has been complications and other factors. And that it sounds like from what we've been reading, not only from the original plan and the slate of movies that were laid out, but also with this recent announcement, and as you point out, a steady flow of information regarding projects, that the mantra might be, and this is just me guessing, but it sounds like the mantra might be momentum. Do not lose momentum. Do not give up that regular, consistent feeling of it's all going to a positive end, things are constantly moving forward. Because I think that's the thing that people are looking for right now. They're waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, all right, we've had plenty of announcements followed by disappointments. So when's the disappointment? And if you keep staving that off, people will change their perception. They're going to think not about, okay, when does this fall apart? But, okay, impressive. Let's keep it going. How much longer can you keep it going? And maybe even start rooting for you a little bit to keep it going. And there's a reason why in sports they refer to the extra man, the extra person when you're in a stadium, those fan support, that feeling of people constantly, instead of shooting up all these ideas that you have to knock down, are saying, hey, great job. You're picking up great pace. And when the next project comes out, it's like, hey, good job. Can't wait for the next one. Because then you start to build this positive momentum. And I think that's something that WB and DC have really struggled with right now. And it's one of the hindrances to a lot of people's responses to the idea of a reboot. They want to get excited for it, but once bitten, right? So keeping all of that in mind, I'm glad for it. And I also feel that if we can keep getting steady information like our next story, it's going to add to that momentum. And I'm referring to the fact that James Gunn has confirmed via over a Game Radar film that a classic DC character with the initials J-O will be appearing in Superman Legacy. Sounds like we'll get another chance to see another version of a classic character who I think has warmed hearts since the comic book days. And for me, I still remember that curly haired young guy in 1978 Superman. Brad, what was your response to this and the feeling of, OK, we're going to keep Jimmy Olsen?
I think it's a very broad statement because he's just saying, yeah, he's going to be in there, but we don't know in what capacity. He could just show up at the end. Oh, hey, I'm Jimmy Olsen, which almost to me in a way makes sense if it's going to be a younger Superman, because Jimmy Olsen has always kind of been. not always, but always seen as kind of like his younger sidekick type character. They keep that going, then I could see him coming in towards the end of the movie when once Clark becomes more established. But, you know, who knows? I mean, we don't even know what the story is going to be about at this point. So I guess I'm glad he's going to be there because, you know, there isn't a lot of information, but at least we're going to get a Jimmy Olsen, which I think is, he's kind of an iconic character and kind of necessary in a way to Superman. So I'm glad he's going to be there. What about you?
I'm definitely glad Jimmy's going to be there, especially because I remember the version of Jimmy that we saw in All-Star Superman, and I thought he was so much fun. I'm also a huge fan of the recent Matt Fraction, whose name I always butcher just because I can't remember if there's an R or not. So it's either Faction or Fraction in my mind, and I just do that. But that Jimmy Olsen series was hands down one of the most... one of the most interesting. It explored all of the facets. For those who aren't familiar with Jimmy, he's had this amazing history from, you know, being a sort of Teenage Mutant Turtle ripoff TV star and character to personality to being, you know, changed into all sorts of different creatures because that's what you get when you hang out with Superman, especially in the 60s and 70s. So all those different parts. And I just remember that great scene where it's like he's in a dress. And I think it's Steve, I can't remember his last name right now, but the jock guy. And he's like, hey, Olsen, you going undercover? And he's like, no, why? And it was just this great moment of like, hey, Jimmy's busy. He's got his own thing going on. And at that point, the character was introduced as already so fully fleshed that you knew all of this information going in. And I think that's going to be one of the fun things because we've been told this isn't an origin story movie. We're going to be introduced to the character as is in that world. One of the things that I applaud to this day is that Grant Morrison can do that in any story. And if you're drawing from a source material like All-Star Superman, where that's already created, it's basically set up for you in a way where you can copy and paste, or you can simply mirror the example and translate it to the screen. But those moments where the character is introduced and fully defined just from appearance and a couple of lines, I think that's really going to ground a lot of great things for us. I think we're going to see Jimmy in not too much of a crucial way. I think he's going to show up. I think he's going to be important for the moments he needs to be. But I also think we're going to see this character hopefully with all of that history included. And I think that's where the fun is because there's sort of a trope, and we're going to get that in the animated version that we've been talking about and things like that. But there's also this whole other side of Jimmy that I think really makes him interesting. And he's one of those characters in the hands of someone like Morrison, you can do so much with. Now you take someone like Gunn, who's turned the version of Guardians of the Galaxy that we've seen into amazing. His work on Suicide Squad took what we knew and just stretched it in the ways that worked for the story so well that I really think this is a fun opportunity. I think we can change the narrative a little bit. And man, I would love to see this spin into like a Jimmy Olsen series because I would watch that hands down. It would be a blast. With that, I have one more interesting story to consider for us in the movie news section. Then we're going to move on over to our next chapters. But it's the idea of bringing over those who have, like Gunn, already succeeded in the MCU. And in this case, we're talking about the Russo brothers, no strangers to success when it comes to bringing superhero stories to life. And the idea that they're open to coming on over and doing a DC project. There's great characters. They probably wouldn't do Batman as much as they love Batman. They feel like it's already been done. So the challenge is, okay, what are the characters they love and what would they do? But the Russo brothers coming over, picking up a DC property. We already know a couple that are already on the list for what's in the future. If they haven't attached directors to it, could you ascribe them to one of those projects or is there a dream character? You know, what was your sort of like thinking as you heard this story first?
I loved Infinity War and Endgame, but more so Infinity War. If Russo Brothers can do anything, it's handle a team. And that is tricky on film, even trickier when you're doing a superhero movie. And they were really able to give characters enough screen time, and importance into the overall story. So I would like to see them do some kind of team movie, whether if we down the line, we get a Justice League movie or even a Justice Society movie. I maybe that's a little bit of a cliche thing to say, is that I want them to do a team book. Maybe I should want them to do see what they do with an individual hero. But I think that in my mind, that's where their strength lies, is in that team dynamic. So I would like to see them do a team movie of some sort. What about you?
So I love the idea of a team movie. The first one that comes to mind for me is the idea of the Terrifics concept that was floated out there. Because I also feel that they can do a great job of showing a team, but also pivoting really well with central focus on specific characters as needed for the plot points in the project. So as you pointed out with Infinity, one of the things I thought they did really well was to bring us the perspective of the story through the characters. So we introduced the tragedy of the Asgardians and the, brutal sort of smackdown that Hulk gets. And then we immediately transfer to a plot line with Stark. And, we move really well through the characters and those stories. And it's through them that we follow the story. Those characters sort of anchor us to each of those moments. I think that would work really well, especially if you were trying to bring a new team in. We've seen the Justice League. We haven't seen the Justice Society. They're a little close to the league, so I want them personally. But I also feel like one of the strengths that we've seen from not only Gunn, but the Russo brothers, is the idea of bringing characters that are not as well known and making them feel really lived in, really, really significant to the stories that they're a part of. They're not periphery. They're always there for a specific reason. So I think they would capture that well, but I like the challenge. I like the challenge you bring up with, what if they take on a solo character? What would it mean for them to take those same talents and have a solo character with a great team of additional characters, whether it be villains in opposition or whether it be those around who are a mix of support and also complexity that we all sort of face? A lot of people might think it's great that you have superpowers and you want to go off and do something, but they're also going to be terrified for your concern, right? So I think they can balance a lot of those ideas well. And I think they demonstrated the challenge of conflict when there's not always one way to proceed. How do you sort of figure that out? What's that like between characters? So I think it could serve really well. And now I'm curious to see where it could end up. Like you pointed out, team, individual character. Cast your votes. You think you got one for us? Let us know. We love to hear all about it. We tell you the ways at the end of each episode to let us know. And, we know you're pretty tech savvy, so we have faith in your ability to reach out to us. Just like I have a lot of faith in this amazing collection of stories we're going to be sharing as we move now into our TV and streaming news. We now have the Sandman Season 2 update. Netflix, the Sandman Season 2, gets an update from Neil Gaiman. Brad, was this enough of an update for you, or did it leave you with a lot of questions, wanting more? Are you sated? How you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty sated. We're pretty early into this whole process, so the fact that he's writing scripts, I'm okay with that for now. Because there's still a lot of stuff up in the air, because they kind of said that, it doesn't necessarily have to be called Season 2, so how are they working that? But I have a feeling that we're going to know more about that soon. But the fact that he's working on it and it's done, and I'm happy about that. That to me, the fact that the story's done is more interesting than all this little bickering between Netflix and Warner Brothers about the lease of the IP. They mentioned that in the article a little bit. Work that out. Just get it done. It's in good hands. Neil Gaiman is going to do a great job, and I'm just glad that it's getting done. And it's almost like, for me, it's one of those things I want to savor, so I don't want to rush through it anyway. So I don't mind. I don't mind the wait. So yeah, I'm excited and glad that it's moving forward. What about you?
It reminds me of how we were just talking about the All-Star Superman. The script's done. That's a great feeling. For me, I'm always, keeping in mind those great writers who point out that they knew a project was sound as long as the project always referenced back to the source material, whether it was the book or the script or, one of those two. Because I think there's also the great idea that when the script's done, you also know there's a treatment that the script was based on, and that's going to be their story Bible. That's what they're going to be leaning into. Whenever the script doesn't address something specifically, they're going to understand it a little bit better going there. And the great thing about Sandman is the Bible is the comics that have already been written. So you have this wonderful source to draw from. I'm also interested in this idea of, so there's that concept that they have for, I've heard it used mostly in media for the Fast and the Furious, as well as all of the Star Wars movies, that there is a sort of machete method for watching those that's out of the original sort of timeline that they're published and produced or made available and printed. With that in mind, could that give them a lot of room to explore? There are so many stories that have been told about the Sandman universe. Can you pull through a couple from each sort of arc, like big arc or thing like that, and tell a story that pulls from those pieces that makes it feel like you're still developing the character, but doesn't prevent you from going back to each one of those arcs later and picking up other pieces and enjoying it? I'm curious because it's like, you know, imagine if someone was like, yeah, we're going to do a story and we're going to just pull from all the works of Shakespeare. It's like, okay, man, you got a lot of work there. There's so many different stories you can pull from. Which do you choose to include in one narrative arc? And then is the way that you choose them something that leaves you all these other options because you know about those other characters? There are so many different places to explore. So I think that's kind of the fun part about a season two. And with the bickering stuff, with the IP, Warner Brothers, they made this. You know, they've been doing all these different things with Discovery and others. And I think when you get into those waters, you create whatever problems you eventually have to deal with. So they made that choice. As you said, figure it out. You know, we didn't cause this problem. We can't offer you the solution. We will be ready. However, people's patience, there's a limit. So I would keep that in mind as well. And hopefully if they do, we'll be announcing soon more updates about Sandman. Not season two, just the next iteration. With that in mind, our next TV and streaming news does have to relate to that same universe. And that's because we have the confirmation that there will be Sandman ties for the upcoming Dead Boy Detectives project. Now, I know that Brad has a wealth of history that, makes whatever I have look like this one pinky nail right there. So with that in mind, Brad, what did you think about what this can mean for crossing over and characters and how Dead Boy Detectives can take what we've already established with the current Sandman series and the upcoming one and go to places it or maybe can't get to for whatever reasons?
I think that right now, if there's one word that DC as a whole is focusing on, whether it's comics and film, it's synergy. And I think it makes total sense. If the Dead Boy Detectives got their start in the Sandman comics, it makes absolutely total sense to connect them to the Sandman universe. I think there's so many fun things that you can do as far as a crossover. With the Dead Boy Detectives, there's not necessarily certain... I could be wrong. Maybe Steve would argue with me on this, but I don't think there's any super iconic stories like there are with Sandman. When you think of Sandman, there's certain things you associate it with, the Seasons of Mist storyline, which we haven't seen yet. The Sound of Her Wings, where we see death. Those are certain iconic points that you have to hit if you're telling a Sandman story. Dead Boy Detectives doesn't have that. So there's a lot of ways that you could weave in Sandman characters. So that could be fun to see too. And if you know going into it, you can market it that way. So Sandman fans might be more inclined to check out Dead Boy Detectives if they know that there's a concrete tie to Sandman. So I think it's a smart thing. The Sandman series has been more popular than and better quality wise than anybody was expecting. So I think it makes total sense to bring them into the Sandman universe. What about you?
I'm really interested. I learn so much every time these stories come up because I get to sort of dig into you and Steve, and you guys have great brains. I'm not flirting, but you do really both have beautiful brains. And it's great when you guys dig into this stuff, you can reveal. So I think the one thing we pulled this story from a comic book. And one of the things that I was noticing when I was just looking it over now is there isn't a suggestion or a hint. And this is actually where I would lean into you or Steve or anyone out there who has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to Sandman and can answer this question for me, because here's where I think it gets interesting. Is there an early story in the Dead Boy Detectives or one that comes to mind at some point that would be a natural fit because the characters from the Sandman universe cross over enough to offer that tangible feeling of like, oh, there wasn't a cameo, like, hey, here's your coffee, and then that's it. We saw a Sandman character universe, and that was it. But more of where there's enough tie-in where that crossover would not only make sense, but would also bring to life a really classic story from the two universes. Anything cross your mind?
Not that jumps into my mind immediately. Now, Steve would probably give you some more examples, but nothing.
They call him Geekopedia for a reason, right?
Yeah. yeah, but nothing that jumps out to me is something that, and I think that's one of the cool things is that if there's not, then there's that move or that option to put them in really cool ways that are fresh and people haven't seen. And you can utilize these classic characters in ways that haven't been seen.
I agree. I want to see how they end up playing it out. I also love that if there are, you know, if there isn't a degree of expectation regarding certain stories, then that also allows for some freedom where, you know, we all know that there are certain limitations to every medium. So the chance for another medium to pick that up, to explore it, to have a little bit of fun, that's always a great feeling. I'm always thinking about those stories that creators at some point share. And they're like, ah, remember when this would have been something great, but it never happened? Doesn't mean it can't still. DC and Warner Brothers own that property. It still exists within their catalog, right? Even if it never made it to the light of day, it's fun material to always include. So I love the options that allows for them to explore. And I think that's going to be great for just about everybody. I am keeping in mind the fact that this is something that tempers a bit the loss that some might be feeling as we are slowly saying goodbye. And in some cases, it feels like it's not so slow to a lot of our favorite CW shows. For our final TV and streaming story for this episode, that the CW has set the season finale date for Superman and Lois. That will be June 27th, Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Gotham Knights wrapping up. We've got, you know, those announcements and the fact that I'm sure there's a couple of other CW shows mixed in here, like The Flash and others. Brad, we're talking about the Dead Boy Detectives and next season of Sandman, but these are also some shows that have been around for a little while now at the CW, and this chapter appears to be closing, if not indefinitely, for the current foreseeable future.
I think for me, it really shows how much I've been enjoying the recent Superman and Lois season, because it feels like the season just started and now it's going to be over relatively soon. So that's kind of a bummer, but it's been a good season. Gotham Knights has also been better than I was expecting it to be. I find when I go in with low expectations on things, I'm generally not disappointed, but I there was a lot that I've enjoyed about Gotham Knights. So my thing, what sticks out to me in my mind about Gotham Knights is that as that season wraps up, I hope we get word whether or not it's going to be renewed, because I think any DC CW show right now is on a little bit of shaky ground, like I said, because of the whole synergy thing, and they're trying to kind of like, you know, circle the wagons and reboot the storytelling. But I hope that both of these shows get renewed and we get to see more of them. What about you?
I would love for that to happen. I think that would be great. I would be thrilled But I'm keeping in mind that when we were on some weeks back now, maybe it's been more than some weeks, but we were on with an episode where we had Damien on with us, and he brought something really interesting to mind to me that I haven't forgotten, which is this idea of there is going to be two different forces that will be at work right now within DC and WB. There will be those who will be part of launching the new chapter and the pieces that will be a part of it, and those who will be sort of responsible for seeing whatever final tie-ins can come. And for me, that's also connecting again with the recent Titans episode that I saw, that I encourage anyone who's curious about that, check it out. It's very interesting what you get to see and the connections that are made. But this idea of there will be a transition from these older properties shutting down to these newer ones starting up, with a few that will be lasting. We were talking recently, Suicide Squad, a couple of characters and some other things like that who will be sticking around from the Peacemaker series and others. It looks like they will be lasting. But overall, we're going to see a lot of these characters come to a close. And I like the idea of any of them getting renewal, but I'd be surprised right now if even Gotham Knights, which unfortunately gets one season and then it's one and done, but that for all the reasons that they decide, Warner Brothers is no longer proceeding with the deals and relationships they have with CW. And unless they make an announcement of picking these up, HBO Max, somewhere else, that this will be sort of the end of those series. Versions that we got.
Like I am used to saying on this podcast, it's a good time to be a DC fan. And when I say that, what I mean is the quality of what is being produced. Where it is very frustrating to be a DC fan is this behind the scenes business thing that's been going on, where we saw the cancellation of Batgirl and all that. And the list goes on. I think at this point, Warner Brothers really owes the fans something. And it looks like they're trying to really deliver on that. And these shows may be a casualty of that, as they do get that synergy going. But, if I have to sacrifice that to get a really good, solid vision going forward, then it's worth it. But I would still like to see these continue.
Definitely. I would like to see it too. I'm always hopeful. I'm also just prepared for the fact that there's already been an announcement for what the future looks like. And many of these projects have not been discussed in any way as being included in that. Among the others as well, The Flash will have its final episode on May 24th at 8 p.m. And essentially after the 27th, we will have wrapped up the DC characters' time on the CW as far as the superhero stories have been told. I'll be interested to see how we choose to pick any of that up, if ever, if there's like a return to the idea of TV and streaming for some of these characters, or if the intention will be something else entirely. We'll have to wait and see. However, you can always know by making sure you come back here. We'll tell you, I guarantee. With that, we move from our TV and streaming into our comic book news. And this is actually one of the moments when I'm glad it's just you and me, because I would be asking you to start off each one of these topics. We have three stories out of our four that are all Flicky fashions. It's just the way it is. I'm not saying it was a plot. I'm not saying it was a conspiracy. But, for those of you who do, prove it. So with that in mind... Our first Flicky fashion story, Catwoman found herself in prison and put together a bit of a makeshift costume. We got a chance to take a glance at it. I'm going to flash the image up just because that's the fun of smartphones. Brad, take it away, my friend. What's the Flicky fashions report?
This costume has a certain, the whole thing is about necessity. She's in prison, needs to find, so I kind of like it. And I can see this being in a movie where Catwoman has to break out of prison and uses prison scrubs. So it's a cool idea that I think would translate well into the real world. And it makes sense. I don't think she's going to take it with her when she goes, but it's going to get the job done. You know, you gotta work with what you have, with the cards you're dealt, essentially. So, yeah, man, it gets the job done. Escape from prison. What about you?
I definitely think it accomplishes all of the necessary goals. Obscures her identity, gives her freedom of movement. Looks like, you know, it does its best to make do with what's available as far as material. You got the pants. You've got, you know, some kind of like an undergarment top, and then something that's cut and shaped so that it can fit over your face and hide your identity. Now, that's not the only character to recently receive a costume update. Over in the deceased War of the Gods recently, Damian Wayne was presented with a white Batman suit. The only thing that really kind of bugged me is we don't see him wearing the suit. But other than that, Brad, just on a, you know, given that's all we really get out of it from this point, what was your take on Damian in a white bat suit?
I like the concept. He was given it as a gift. And the idea is that the world's so dark with the anti-life equation and the whole thing that's going on, we need some light. So here's a white bat suit, because you're so used to Batman being kind of in the darkness, fighting the darkness from inside. So I think that's an interesting juxtaposition of using the light to fight back the darkness. I think it makes sense. And I can't really comment too much on the suit because we don't get to really see it much in the artwork, but I like the concept and the idea behind it, I think is kind of cool. What about you?
I like the concept. It makes me think of all sorts of fun stuff, you know, Batman, White Knight universe, different things like that. We've seen moments where Batman has put on the white costume for whatever reason, the end of Kingdom Come. I can think of when they did that sort of jump into the future and they met a later version of the Justice League and Batman was again offering up white. So it definitely seems to be this signal of when it's necessary, there's a change from instilling fear to inspiring hope. And I like what you mentioned about the concept as it's presented in the story. There's so much darkness in the world, the anti-life equation, the way it's affected people, the sort of steady loss of loved ones in tragic ways. Suddenly you now have this bright spark. I think it can serve well, not only for the story, but I've enjoyed the version of Damian they presented in there, you know, the part where he's sewing and he kind of laughs like, I don't understand what was with Batman. You know, why do you have Alfred do all this stuff? It's simple work. It's good for you. Things like that. So I'm interested. I'm curious. I'm also interested in our next story, in which Nightwing receives some temptation and in the process becomes, Superwing. I'm not really feeling that name at the moment. However, we do get to see a Nightwing in an updated costume floating above the ground and a suggestion for Temptation to follow. It was interesting when I was reading that. It reminded me of the old Starman series, Seduction of Starman. It was kind of like his downfall. Anyways, I was interested what you thought about this version of Nightwing with powers and a new suit. Course, with the catch that we always know with Neron, there is no free lunch.
Yeah, you know, you get powers, you get new powers, you get new suit. That's kind of how it goes in comics. The suit itself, from I guess a Flicky Fashions perspective, I kind of like it. It seems very 80s influenced. Like, I got hints of like the old Blue Beetle costume, the old Booster Gold costume in a way, even hints of the Black Lightning costume. So it kind of made me feel very taken back to the 80s, which I kind of liked. And yeah, there is no free lunch. I think that's going to be a very temporary thing, but it's going to be fun to watch happen, because that Nightwing series has been so good. It's easily one of the best superhero books out on the market. Between the storytelling and the perspectives that it's just been a great series. So I'm along for the ride. Give him powers, take him away, give him a new costume. I'm here for it. What about you?
I'm always interested in the chance to try something a little new. We've seen Nightwing go through many transformations, many different costume styles. I also like what you mentioned. It does feel like an homage to the earliest versions of it, also with a little reference to the Black Lightning original costume. That combination of black, yellow, and blue and white works really well. It can be very eye-catching and seems to move well. I think the one thing that's going to be sort of fun is how they approach what I feel is going to be, I think, a factor for Dick Grayson as much as it's always been for Bruce Wayne. The concern that powers make you complacent, that you rely on them too much. And then also there's something about that nuance of control that they offer whenever they're fighting, the ability to, you know, throw a punch that's going to break something or one that has a different effect. And that control, it means something to them, I think, to both of them, especially for Dick as an acrobat, someone who's used to defying gravity through his, you know, natural athletic ability and years of training. The powers will probably be fun and he'll get to do some cool stuff. But in the end, I don't think it's going to be the kind of temptation that the story suggests. And if it is, I think they're going to have to present it in a very interesting way in order to challenge the idea that Dick, in very many ways, he has modeled his sort of thinking, attitudes, behavior on those that were part of his training. And that there was one thing that I think he really embraced from Batman, which is the idea of you don't need powers. Sure, they're nice, but do you need them? I don't think it's going to play out. So I'm curious to see how that will happen. For our final comic book story, Tales of the Titans. If you remember Tales of the Titans from the the 80s, that wonderful series that we had, we're bringing back a feeling of that, carrying on that tradition. We've got some announcements and a story coming from out of a comic book that back in the spotlight, DC on Wednesday. It's going to be written by Shannon Hale and Dean Hale, previously who've worked on things like Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld, Diana and Nubia, Princesses of the Amazons. Brad, what do you think about this Tales of the Titans that we're going to get a chance to see and what we can expect, hope for?
I really like the idea of solo stories from the Titans. I think that's a cool concept. And I like the team. I have loved their work on what they did with Wonder Woman and Nubia. And, I'm there for that too. So I'm intrigued. I think that they can do a good job. And I think that they could draw from some cool characters that maybe we haven't seen a lot of recently that were connected to the Titans. We could maybe see different times, like, you know, maybe back in, you know, in the 80s during when, you know, kind of that was, to me, that was always been the prime of the Titans, their popularity, as somebody who started collecting comics in the 80s. So I just think there's a lot you can do with it. And I like the idea of solo stories. I'd like to see, solo Raven story and like solo Starfire story. So yeah, I think this is a good idea. I'm down for it. What about you?
I'm a fan of the solo stories. I like when the team gets an opportunity to dig down into a character and share a little bit more with us. You know, one of the biggest challenges, as we've talked, when you have an ensemble, is how do you get enough screen time, credit time, story time for each character? And sometimes it's sort of a cyclical approach. You know, each story is going to delve more into different ones. The fact that you can have stories dedicated to each character that sort of grounds them not only in who they are, but how they connect to this team, it's going to be a lot of fun. Plus, when it comes to the Titans, it's hard to say no. It's just so hard to say, like, everything that you offer me with them, everything that we've seen recently, Cammy Garcia's great work, everything she did from Raven to Beast Boy. It's been phenomenal stuff. So there's clearly so many different versions of the Titans that people are interested in, they're excited for. And I think this is a really easy way to feed the fire. Like, I'm going to find myself July 18th. Yes. Going like, yeah, give me that first issue. Let's see what we got. Hook me, make me want to come back for more. And that's always a great feeling. I love getting a first issue, reading it through, and then, yep, pulling up the website or calling the shop and be like, hey guys, can we add this to my list? I'm going to get it regular now. And I'm hopeful for the same thing, because I do also feel that there's been this great, we've talked about how well DC has done the anthologies, and I think there's been this great resurgence in the stories about these characters who exist in teams, but we don't get to enjoy at this level as much. And there's a bit of a hunger for it now. Like, okay, anthologies give you a taste. Stories like this, full issues, they actually sort of, well, we were talking about before, right? They sate the hunger. I'm also excited for the fact that we're going to have that Cyborg series now, which is a great little spinoff. So I think more Titans is generally a good thing for DC. It seems like it's like almost like more Batman. Like, you don't go wrong. It's going to sell. You're going to have lots of people enjoying it, whether they were fans of the Teen Titans Go, Titans, you name it, right? Or they started reading the stories back in the 80s originally. With that, we move to our final story, which is in our other news, something that Brad and I were talking about last week. And Brad, you, I'm not saying you were reading their minds, but clearly you had your thumb like right on the pulse. The challenge that was suggested was the idea of the recent announcement of a delay that was pushing the release all the way back to February 2nd of 2024. Brad thoughtfully brought up a concern and a question, which was the idea of a need for it to be an online-only version of the game, and how now it appears, at least in this story from Comic Book, that the reason for the delay is actually to reverse this controversial feature, and the complexity of that is actually what will prevent it from being available until February 2nd. Interesting sort of twist on the narrative compared to what we were talking about last week. What's your thoughts now that this story has continued for us?
If that rumor is true, that is one of the best reasons to delay a game I have ever heard, because I was not a fan of this idea. I'm looking forward to a good solo play. I don't need to be online with it. And that seems, the online only seemed to be pushing people in a way that they wanted to do multiplayer or co-op. And that's not, it's not what I'm interested in, especially from a Rocksteady game. And there's been, like I mentioned this last week, where, you know, Rocksteady is so good at the single player experience that they, people have said, oh, stay in their lane and not worry about the multiplayer. You know, maybe that's a good thing. And video games as a medium are interesting because they're the one medium where the fans can really have an impact and say quickly, because games are constantly evolving. Even when they're released, things get changed. When the third Mass Effect was released, people hated the ending so much that the developer ended up changing the ending. Now, you can't see that in a book or in a movie or a TV show. You know, you get what you get. But with these video games, they can constantly evolve. And I think that Rocksteady, you know, saw the reaction and was like, wait a minute. We need to take this off. And I'm willing to wait if that's gone. So I think that's a good decision. So that's my take. What about you?
I completely agree. I think it's one of those decisions where you're actually showing a responsible manufacturer, you know, responsible producer, who's not saying, here, take it, like it or don't, but, you know, move on. And this is one saying, hold on a second. We want this. We want this to work. We want this to work for you. And these are the lengths, these are the steps that we're willing to go with, an understanding that if we do this right by you, we've got you for years. Just to give me a sense of history, when did the first Arkham game come out from Rocksteady? How long has it been now?
Oh, man. 10 years, more than that, maybe. I don't know exactly. I know that, well, actually, maybe even more than that. I know I played the first Arkham game back in the beginning of 2014, and by that time, they had already had 3 out. So it's been at least 10 years, and it's probably more than that, but I just know off the top of my head.
And as someone who played it then and, you know, almost 10 years later now, at least is willing to like, hey, when's this new one come out and pick it up? That's the kind of loyalty that if you continue to provide a great product, people right. will remember and they're going to keep coming back to. It's going to keep them around 10 years from now when you come out with your next big thing where you want to say, hey, audience base, here's what you've been waiting for, another chapter in a great story.
To me, those memes are console sellers. I would get a gaming console to play a good Arkham game, and that's saying something. So that's, I'm so glad that they're taking that feature out.
Well, I'm really impressed. I would actually say that for any business out there, this would be a model of how you want to behave when it comes to your customers. My wife was recently watching an old episode of Scandal. She's been going through the series again, but it was really funny. I'm doing different things and I'm walking past and I hear a character say, when you give people a bad product, they don't always come back around for the next one. They remember it. They sort of feel like you've betrayed their trust and expectation because you had a choice to do whatever was needed to give a good product. And when you make the choice not to, it's remembered. And I think this is a really great example of that, where if you put in the time and effort, and as you said, you have the opportunity. You can't accomplish this with a book or a movie. You can't come back later and provide the director's cut. Even if you do, the one that's still in a lot of people's mind is going to be the one that you initially present. So making sure that they land in a way that's going to serve fans so that then if they need to make changes, I think this is also, and I'm going to do my cyclical thing, this is going to wrap us all the way back to that movie story we were talking about with James Gunn, with the idea of you want to have that steady, positive momentum. And Rocksteady is recognizing that. And they know that if they do it now and they do the delay, then that means that fans will talk to them if they want additional changes, and they're going to have a good support system for doing that instead of one where it's like, wow, you blew it. Now you got to fix it. Now we're annoyed with you. And then everything afterwards you have to fix is just going to be like one more thing, one more problem. It's the problem that never goes away. Whereas you can solve the problem now and look how happy folks are going to be. So that's my final thought. Any additional words on that story, simply because you have more to share than I probably can?
I would just say that even video games can even change things more than a director's cut, because they can, even a director's cut of a movie has a set story. With the video games, you can update and change the entire story. Not, well, part of the story, let's say, like going back to the Mass Effect thing, you can change the ending. You know, you just update it. Even the Snyder cut, for instance, of a movie, that's, it still has a lot of the DNA that was there before, you know, when Joss Whedon took it over. So even it's even different than the concept of a director's cut. I'm just this is such a good decision, I think, bottom line. If they were, the only thing that would make it better for me personally is if they came out and said, this is a single player only game. And this is like, this is the narrative, you know, narrative driven game. That's what I'm there for. So, but good job, Rocksteady.
Impressive that they're going to find a way and attempt to find a way to service both needs for those players who want one, those who want the other, or those who want the option. Sounds like really responsible thinking. And I can honestly say, if we saw that in other industries from other leaders, well, we'd notice the difference. Let's put it that way. What a great way to wrap up. Brad, thank you so much, man. That was a really cool list of stories. Big thanks to our DCN editor-in-chief, Mr. Josh Rayner, always putting together the good stuff for you. No, we don't do that. They give us this amazing thing he does, and with that, we turn around and we're lucky enough to share great stories with you. I've been your host, Seth Singleton. This has been episode number 173 of the DC Comics News Weekly Podcast. Thankfully, you didn't just have to listen to me. You got the wisdom, the wit, the insight, and more importantly, the Filicky fashions from Mr. Brad Filicky. Should you want to follow up with him, Brad, if they do and they're like, man, I want to talk to you more about fashion or games or something else, what's your favorite place to send the folks so that they can say hi? You know, chop it up.
Yeah, you can find me on DC Comics News, writing news reviews, writing a few reviews for Josh's site, Mark with the Movie Blog. Find me on this podcast, and I always say it every week, but hopefully we'll get back to recording the Mad Love Harley Quinn podcast part of this great DC Comics News podcast network, and you can follow me on Twitter at FlickyB1. Where can people find you?
You can find me here as many weeks as I can make it happen on the DC Comics News Weekly podcast. We get Mad Love up. I will do my best to make it work, too. I will say, if you think I look a little bleary-eyed now, if we include that, I will look more bleary-eyed. I'm just adorably sleepless these days. So I want it to happen. I'm hopeful I can be a part of as many episodes as we end up being able to do. With all of that in mind, too, make sure that you don't miss out on all of that great stuff. Now, as far as me, really quickly, my name's Seth Singleton. Type that into a search bar and Linktree, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that'll pop up that you can come say, hey, one of them, a comic strip that I write called Greedy Greg, and we actually have a new one coming out on April 23rd. So if you're looking for a new adventure from Greedy Greg, you can check that out. Otherwise, Seth Singleton, Linktree, find me on your favorite, send me a message. But back to the thing that I think is really important. This is a home. This is a podcast network. And the things that we're here to offer for you include our weekly podcast. So you subscribe. That's always in your feed. Mad Love when we pick it back up. We also love to try and do shows about other shows. One of our most popular, longest running has to be I Am the Knight, the Batman the Animated Series, hosted by our amazing Mr. Steve J. Ray. Takes all of the great history, breaks it down with his son, Adam. It's a wonderful experience. Highly encourage you to subscribe for not only the weekly podcast, but great shows like that. New stuff coming your way. We never know what we're putting together. But if you subscribe, you never have to worry about missing out. Go to the social medias when you want to send us a message, a question, love us, doubt us, whatever. At DC Comics News, capital D, capital C, capital C, OMICS, capital N, EWS. Use that handle. Send us whatever you're thinking. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Are we on TikTok? I don't know, man. Just tag us. We'll say hi. We'll find you. And we'll get a great chance to hang out, hear what you're thinking. Also, let us know about these questions we love asking during the podcast. Tell us your answers. Tell us things we missed you think we should include. Give us your versions of history. Expand our knowledge and let us continue enjoying all these great stories with you in such wonderful ways, like all these great platforms. With that, there's only one thing we like to remind you. Until next time, and that is to always
read
more comics. Ah, we had an echo effect. Yeah. Wasn't even part of the strategy, and it was awesome. All right. With that, thank you, everyone. It's always a pleasure. Can't wait to chat more stories with you next time. Bye now.